Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, in agricultural terms, we tend to think of Ireland as an exporter of beef, butter and milk. But per capita, Ireland has the third highest rate of cheese production in the world. But the vast majority of it is exported. So why aren't we indulging more in our cheesiness? The farmer and columnist Hannah Quinn Mulligan has been pondering this. Good afternoon, Hannah.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
Now, I suppose we should start by saying, because before the complaints start flooding in, that there are a lot of absolutely excellent Irish cheesemakers around the place.
There are a lot of excellent small-scale Irish cheesemakers out there, but we are not the French. And while we are massive fans of cheddar cheese, I doubt that a lot of listeners might know the difference between their Roquefort and their Raclette. And you know, that's okay. You know, it's all right to have a humble taste in cheese. But we are definitely not the French in terms of our bravery, even in what we try.
Yeah, and so even that like that massive amount of cheese that we export, that would be mostly cheddar, would it?
Oh, it's nearly all cheddar. Yeah, cheddar and even blander mozzarella. And then I guess the interesting thing then for and people into their protein powder is if you think of the Little Miss Moppet eating her curds and whey, well, the whey is now dried out and it used to be a waste product, but now it's turned into protein powder and it's a multi-billion euro industry. So, so if you're a dairy processor out there, you're doing pretty well on your cheese and your whey now.
Oh, right. Okay. So because I imagine if you're an artisan producer of cheeses in Ireland, it's probably tricky enough to, you know, make a living from it.
It isn't fantastic, no. And I guess what I'm trying to do is we do have a small scale dairy and we make all our own products and we have a farm shop. But every year I try to, well, we've nailed kefir and yogurt and butter and cream and all of those delicious things. I never am able to make cheese for whatever reason. And I end up nearly poisoning my grandmother because she's the only one brave enough to try the kind of the moldy concoctions that I come up with.
Yes.
So this year, I think I am going to try and nail cheese anyway, yeah. Basically.
Well, no, well, obviously your cheese isn't that bad if, you know, your grandmother still...
No, it's not great. No, it's a testament to my grandmother's love for me that she would be brave enough to try the cheese.
Indeed.
And trust it. I don't think anyone else would. No. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've ever had even a romantic partner that would be brave enough to try the cheese out of love. No.
That's, yes. Litany of failed relationships because of cheese tasting. So actually, Hannah, like, take us through it. Like, obviously you have the supply of milk on the farm. Like, what are the stages in actually making cheese?
I was talking earlier to your researcher. It's actually quite a beautiful process because we are inherently programmed to love milk at a temperature of about 35 degrees. Because that's anyone with children out there, you know, that's basically bottle temperature. It's bottle warm is what it's called. And when you're making cheese, you have kind of a giant vat. We've got one that's about 120 litres, which is pretty small, actually, by vat terms. You have the milk at that temperature and you're adding rennet to it, and after about an hour at that temperature it'll start to split into curds and whey. And if you're really French, what you'll do then is you'll stick your whole arm in this kind of marshmallow like substance and start kind of breaking up the curds. And maybe it sounds revolting, but it's actually lovely. It's a really nice temperature to be kind of stirring your arm around it. And then you drain it. And we're lucky enough, we have pigs. So the pigs get the whey. And so they have their own little protein shake. They're delighted with that. And we try not to waste anything. And then you have to drain the curds, sort of like in a big colander, if you imagine that. And you can do it at home as well. People do it on a small scale. Everyone's watching YouTube videos on how to do it. And then it's the maturing of the cheese, which is the hardest part for me, because traditionally you would have used a cave to mature your cheese in. But we don't really have very many caves or a cave outside the farm to do that in.
A cave, as in an actual cave?
Yeah, that's how they would have matured cheese back in the day. And the story actually of how blue cheese was discovered was that a shepherdess got caught in a storm on a mountainside and took shelter in this cave and found this old sandwich that someone had left behind from previous sheltering, and the bread had rotted away, but the cheese was still there and it had gone all kind of bluey and smelly and disgusting. But she was so hungry that she ate this blue cheese and thought it was the most marvellous thing ever and ran back to her village and told everyone about it. And that's the story, apparently, of how blue cheese was discovered.
Okay.
So, yes. So instead of a storm, a shepherdess in a cave, I have bought a giant wine cooler instead, which can also be used to mature your cheese.
Okay, so yeah. What are conditions supposed to be like inside your wine cooler slash cave?
Well, that's the thing. If you've ever been into a cave, if you think Valois Cave and the Burn or anything like that, it's kind of humid as well as about 16 degrees, kind of around that. So while you're fancy wine cooler might be able to get to 16 degrees, it's not very humid, so you're meant to put in maybe a basin of water to kind of increase the humidity. So the cheese is a week old, it has another 2 weeks to go, and I have noticed it's a bit dry, so there's no mold, which is a plus sign.
Okay.
but there's also just maybe a little bit dry. So yeah, so we'll have to see.
Yeah. And at this stage in the process, is there a particular sort of cheese you're aiming to make?
Yeah. So I thought long and hard about this because obviously, like I said, we kind of nearly have, I don't want to say a pleb's taste in cheese, but we do kind of have a pleb's taste in cheese in Ireland, that we're just fascinated with cheddar. So I did think about it. And then I said, you know what? I actually love cheddar. So we'll just stick with trying to make something like a cheddar. The issue with the cheddar is that it can take up to 2 years to mature. And I don't particularly want to wait that long, especially because since we have a farm shop and Christmas isn't that long away. Can I say that? In cheese terms, it's not that long away. So I want a cheese that's ready in time for Christmas. So, so I'm experimenting with cheeses that kind of are similar to cheddar, but don't take as long. But yeah, I'd love to make a crumbly, creamy cheddar is what I would love to be able to create.
Right. Okay. And so that, like, and to make the different sorts of cheese, is what's that largely dependent on? Is it?
Oh my God, it's insane! Like, it's down to the cow as well. Like, that's how scientific this can get. It, like, if you're in France, they talk about the perfect cow being like a Montbéliard type cow, and we don't have them here in Ireland. I do have Jerseys who have super creamy milk, so the cheese is actually already quite golden from the golden milk of the Jerseys. So it can be down to the milk, it can be down to whether it's the morning milk or the evening milk. Then after that, it can be how the curds are broken up, the size of the curds, at what stage you salt the curds, every little thing. Like, I was talking to one cheesemaker and he says on the days that he makes cheese, he doesn't change anything about his routine, to the point where, like, he'll eat breakfast and have the same thing for breakfast, lunch and dinner every single day. Like, that's how... that's how obsessive really good cheesemakers get. I'm not sure I can get that obsessive, but I'm doing my best.
Yeah. But I don't understand why, you know, I'm going to have the same bowl of cornflakes. That's going to make something that's a roquefort or
exactly
a cheddar.
8:43 a.m. I will have my bowl of cornflakes. Yeah, exactly.
So can you know at this stage of the game whether what's going to come out the other end is going to be good or not? Or is there a degree of waiting?
No, that's part of the fun. You know, I have no idea what's going to come out the other end. But it is a very kind of watching it every day, and it's kind of a beautiful process. And it is changing color, and yeah, they're these beautiful kind of golden forms. They're like giant baby bells at the minute. So and of course the first batch might not turn out right, and I might not be happy with it, and it might change, and you never know. I might try and experiment to make a brie or something. But it's a fun thing. And like I said, people can do it at home. You know, even I'd have people who come to the farm shop and would buy about 20 litres of milk once in a blue moon, and then they go home and make their own cheese from it. So, if you are interested, you can look up these things online on YouTube and stuff and make some of your own cheese. And you can use vegetarian rennet as well, you know, if you're a vegetarian. It's good fun. I would advise it. It's very easy to make soft cheese as well, like really, really easy to make soft cheese.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Aisling from Velvet Cloud in Claremorris says, we sell sheep's cheese and yoghurt. Can't produce enough to fulfil demand in Ireland. We're trying to increase the business every year.
I'd believe her. I mean, it's actually, it's interesting as well. We are very obsessed with dairy. We eat a lot of yogurt as well. And we started doing a Greek yogurt that gets strained and we cannot keep up with demand. So, I mean, there's a lot of talk, and I know milk price has gone down, talking in a wider general sense. But I mean, Irish people actually love their dairy products. And if you can make something, some form of delicious dairy, people will appreciate it. Now, I might not be the biggest sheep's milk fan in the world, just saying to Aisling, but that's okay. Other people are, and I'm delighted that she's doing well on that as well.
Yeah. So at what stage, Hannah, will you know or not, you know, this year it's been a success, we've cracked it, or, you know, will your granny be going, oh no, not this again?
So in 2 weeks time, I'll be texting you telling you about the success of the cheese, or else, you know, granny's obituary will be going on RIP. No, I definitely won't. You'll know in 2 weeks time, but actually then the experimentation phase, I'll probably crack one open in 2 weeks, but I might leave another one for a bit longer just to see if the aging makes any difference, or how it ages.
Okay, so you can't change it at that point. You can't inject something into it.
No, you can't. You can't. But I mean, it is fascinating. Like, if you look at Gouda cheese, or Gouda, however you want to pronounce it, I mean, that has to be like in a salt bath. So you have to put weights on it and put it in a salty bath for a couple of days and then let it dry and cover it in wax. So, I mean, wow. I might do that at one stage as well. But it's fun. Cheese is good fun. I got bored of yogurt and kefir. You know, that's simple enough. Once you do one, you can do the other. But yeah, so I've moved on to cheese.
Yeah. And in previous years, Hannah, when the cheese hasn't worked out, what did you do with it?
Did
the pigs get it?
So she's like, don't waste it, leave it there in the fridge. And like, no, I'm not letting you eat any more of this. So usually the hens or the pigs got it, and no hen or pig died of as a result, which is always good. But this year I'm hoping it'll go to human consumption rather than animal consumption.
Okay, well, fingers crossed, Hannah. We're all hoping for the best there.
Thank you very much.
That was Hannah Quinn Mulligan there, a journalist and a farmer, obviously, in Tory Hill House in Limerick.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.